file tool.
"I'm sure those are not the right words," said poor Alice, and her eyes filled with tears again as she went on. "I must be Mabel after all, and I shall have to go and live in that poky little house and have next to no toys to play with and, oh, ever so many lessons to learn. No, I've made up my mind about it. If I'm Mabel, I'll stay down here. It'll be no use their putting their heads down and saying, 'Come up again, dear.' I shall only look up and say, 'Who am I, then? Tell me that first, and then, if I like being that person, I'll come up. If not, I'll stay down here till I'm somebody else.' But, oh, dear," cried Alice with a sudden burst of tears, "I do wish they would put their heads down. I'm so very tired of being all alone here." As she said this, she looked down at her hands, and was surprised to see that she had put on one of the rabbit's little white kid gloves while she was talking. "Can I have done that?" she thought. "I must be growing small again." She got up and went to the table to measure herself by it, and found that, as nearly as she could guess, she was now about 2 feet high and was going on shrinking rapidly. She soon found out that the cause of this was the fan she was holding, and she dropped it hastily, just in time to save herself from shrinking away altogether. "That was a narrow escape," said Alice, a good deal frightened at the sudden change, but very glad to find herself still in existence. "And now for the garden." And she ran with all speed back to the little door. But, alas, the little door was shut again, and the little golden key was lying on the glass table as before. "And things are worse than ever," thought the poor child, "for I never was so small as this before, never. And I declare it's too bad, that it is." As she said these words, her foot slipped, and in another moment, splash, she was up to her chin in salt water. Her first idea was that she had somehow fallen into the sea. "And in that case, I can go back by railway," she said to herself. Alice had been to the seaside once in her life, and had come to the general conclusion that wherever you go to on the English coast, you find a number of bathing machines in the sea, some children digging in the sand with wooden spades, then a row of lodging houses, and behind them a railway station. However, she soon made out that she was in the pool of tears which she had wept when she was 9 feet high. "I wish I hadn't cried so much," said Alice, as she swam about trying to find her way out. "I shall be punished for it now, I suppose, by being drowned in my own tears. That will be a queer thing, to be sure. However, everything is queer today." Just then she heard something splashing about in the pool a little way off, and she swam nearer to make out what it was. At first she thought it must be a walrus or hippopotamus, but then she remembered how small she was now, and she soon made out that it was only a mouse that had slipped in like herself. "Would it be of any use now," thought Alice, "to speak to this mouse? Everything is so out of the way down here that I should think very likely it could talk. At any rate, there's no harm in trying." So she began. "Oh, mouse, do you know the way out of this pool? I'm very tired of swimming about here, oh, mouse." Alice thought this must be the right way of speaking to a mouse. She had never done such a thing before, but she remembered having seen in her brother's Latin grammar, "A mouse, of a mouse, to a mouse, oh, mouse." The mouse looked at her rather inquisitively, and seemed to her to wink with one of its little eyes, but it said nothing. "Perhaps it doesn't understand English," thought Alice. "I dare say it's a French mouse, come over with William the Conqueror." For, with all her knowledge of history, Alice had no very clear notion how long ago anything had happened. So she began again. "Où est ma chatte?" which was the first sentence in her French lesson book. The mouse gave a sudden leap out of the water, and seemed to quiver all over with fright. "Oh, I beg your pardon," cried Alice hastily, afraid that she had hurt the poor animal's feelings. "I quite forgot you didn't like cats." "Not like cats," cried the mouse in a shrill, passionate voice. "Would you like cats if you were me?" "Well, perhaps not," said Alice in a soothing tone. "Don't be angry about it. And yet, I wish I could show you our cat Dinah. I think you'd take a fancy to cats if only you could see her." "She is such a dear, quiet thing," Alice went on, half to herself, as she swam lazily about in the pool. "And she sits purring so nicely by the fire, licking her paws and washing her face, and she is such a nice soft thing to nurse, and she's such a capital one for catching mice." "Oh, I beg your pardon," cried Alice again, for this time the mouse was bristling all over, and she felt certain it must be really offended. "We won't talk about her any more, if you'd rather not." "We, indeed," cried the mouse, who was trembling down to the end of its tail, "as if I would talk on such a subject. Our family always hated cats, nasty, low, vulgar things. Don't let me hear the name again." "I won't indeed," said Alice, in a great hurry to change the subject of conversation. Are you fond of dogs?" The mouse did not answer, so Alice went on eagerly. "There's such a nice little dog near our house. I should like to show you. A little bright-eyed terrier, you know, with, oh, such long curly brown hair. and it'll fetch things when you throw them, and it'll sit up and beg for its dinner and all sorts of things. I can't remember half of them. And it belongs to a farmer, you know, and he says it's so useful, it's worth £100. He says it kills all the rats and... Oh, dear, cried Alice in a sorrowful tone. I'm afraid I've offended it again. For the mouse was swimming away from her as hard as it could go and making quite a commotion in the pool as it went. So she cried softly after it. Mouse, dear, do come back again, and we won't talk about cats or dogs either, if you don't like them. When the mouse heard this, it turned round and swam slowly back to her. Its face was quite pale, with passion, Alice thought, and it said in a low, trembling voice, "Let us get to the shore, and then I'll tell you my history, and you'll understand why it is I hate cats and dogs." It was high time to go, for the pool was getting quite crowded with the birds and animals that had fallen into it. There was a duck and a dodo, a lory and an eaglet, and several other curious creatures. Alice led the way, and the whole party swam to the shore. Chapter 3. A Caucus Race and a Long Tail. They were indeed a queer-looking party that assembled on the bank. The birds with draggled feathers, the animals with their fur clinging close to them, and all dripping wet, cross, and uncomfortable. The first question, of course, was how to get dry again. They had a consultation about this, and after a few minutes it seemed quite natural to Alice to find herself talking familiarly with them as if she had known them all her life. Indeed, she had quite a long argument with the Lowry, who at last turned sulky and would only say, "I'm older than you, and must know better." And this Alice would not allow, without knowing how old it was, and as the Lowry positively refused to tell its age, there was no more to be said. At last the mouse, who seemed to be a person of some authority among them, called out, "Sit down, all of you, and listen to me. I'll soon make you dry enough." They all sat down at once in a large ring with the mouse in the middle. Alice kept her eyes anxiously fixed on it, for she felt sure she would catch a bad cold if she did not get dry very soon. "Ahem," said the mouse with an important air. "Are you all ready? This is the driest thing I know. Silence all round, if you please. William the Conqueror, whose cause was much favoured by the Pope, was soon submitted to by the English, who wanted leaders, and had been of late much accustomed to usurpation and conquest. Edwin and Morcar, the Earls of Mercia and Northumbria..." "Ugh," said the Lorry with a shiver. "I beg your pardon," said the mouse, frowning, but very politely. "Did you speak?" "Not I," said the Lorry, hastily. "I thought you did," said the mouse. "I proceed. Edwin and Morcar, the Earls of Mercia and Northumbria, declared for him, and even Stigand, the patriotic Archbishop of Canterbury, found it advisable..."
"Found what?" said the duck.
"Found it," the mouse replied, rather crossly. "Of course you know what it means."
"I know what it means, well enough. When I find a thing," said the duck, "it's generally a frog, or a worm. The question is, what did the Archbishop find?"
The mouse did not notice this question, but hurriedly went on. "It found it advisable to go with Edgar Atheling to meet William and offer him the crown. William's conduct at first was moderate, but the insolence of his Normans..." "How are you getting on now, my dear?" it continued, turning to Alice as it spoke. "As wet as ever," said Alice in a melancholy tone. "It doesn't seem to dry me at all." "In that case," said the Dodo, solemnly, rising to its feet, "I move that the meeting adjourn for the immediate adoption of more energetic remedies."
"Speak English," said the Eaglet. "I don't know the meaning of half those long words, and what's more, I don't believe you do either."
And the Eaglet bent down its head to hide a smile. Some of the other birds tittered audibly. "What I was going to say," said the Dodo in an offended tone, "was that the best thing to get us dry would be a caucus race." "What is a caucus race?" said Alice. Not that she much wanted to know, but the Dodo had paused as if it thought that somebody ought to speak, and no one else seemed inclined to say anything.
"Why," said the Dodo, "the best way to explain it is to do it.
And as you might like to try the thing yourself some winter day, I will tell you how the Dodo managed it. First, it marked out a race course in a sort of circle.
'The exact shape doesn't matter,' it said.
And then all the party were placed along the course, here and there. There was no 1, 2, 3 and away, but they began running when they liked, and left off when they liked, so that it was not easy to know when the race was over. However, when they had been running half an hour or so, and were quite dry again, the Dodo suddenly called out, 'The race is over!' And they all crowded round it, panting, and asking, 'But who has won?' This question the Dodo could not answer without a great deal of thought, and it stood for a long time with one finger pressed upon its forehead, the position in which you usually see Shakespeare in the pictures of him, while the rest waited in silence. At last the dodo said, "Everybody has won, and all must have prizes." "But who is to give the prizes?" quite a chorus of voices asked.
"Why, she, of course," said the dodo, pointing to Alice with one finger,
and the whole party at once crowded round her, calling out in a confused way, "Prizes, prizes!" Alice had no idea what to do, and in despair she put her hand in her pocket and pulled out a box of comfits. Luckily the salt water had not got into it, and handed them round as prizes. There was exactly one apiece, all round.
"But she must have a prize herself, you know," said the mouse.
"Of course," the dodo replied, very gravely. "What else have you got in your pocket?" he went on, turning to Alice. "Only a thimble," said Alice, sadly.
"Hand it over here," said the dodo.
Then they all crowded round her once more, while the dodo solemnly presented the thimble, saying,
"We beg your acceptance of this elegant thimble."
And when it had finished this short speech, they all cheered. Alice thought the whole thing very absurd, but they all looked so grave that she did not dare to laugh, and as she could not think of anything to say, she simply bowed and took the thimble, looking as solemn as she could. The next thing was to eat the comfits. This caused some noise and confusion, as the large birds complained that they could not taste theirs, and the small ones choked and had to be patted on the back. However, it was over at last, and they sat down again in a ring and begged the mouse to tell them something more.
"You promised to tell me your history, you know," said Alice,
"and why it is you hate C and D," she added in a whisper, half afraid that it would be offended again.
"Mine's a long and sad tale," said the mouse, turning to Alice and sighing.
"It is a long tale, certainly," said Alice, looking down with wonder at the mouse's tail.
"But why do you call it sad?"
And she kept on puzzling about it while the mouse was speaking, so that her idea of the tale was something like this. Fury said to a mouse that he met in the house, "Let us both go to law. I will prosecute you. Come, I'll take no denial. We must have the trial, for really this morning I've nothing to do." Said the mouse to the cur, "Such a trial, dear sir, with no jury or judge, would be wasting our breath."
"I'll be judge, I'll be jury," said cunning old Fury. "I'll try the whole cause and condemn you to death."
"You are not attending," said the mouse to Alice severely. "What are you thinking of?"
"I beg your pardon," said Alice very humbly. "You had got to the fifth bend, I think."
"I had not," cried the mouse sharply and very angrily.
"And not," said Alice, always ready to make herself useful and looking anxiously about her.
"Oh, do let me help you to undo it."
"I shall do nothing of the sort," said the mouse, getting up and walking away. "You insult me by talking such nonsense."
"I didn't mean it," pleaded poor Alice, "but you're so easily offended, you know." The mouse only growled in reply.
"Please come back and finish your story," Alice called after it, and the others all joined in the chorus. "Yes, please do."
But the mouse only shook its head impatiently and walked a little quicker.
"What a pity it wouldn't stay," sighed the lorry, as soon as it was quite out of sight.
And an old crab took the opportunity of saying to her daughter, "Ah, my dear, let this be a lesson to you never to lose your temper."
"Hold your tongue, ma," said the young crab, a little snappishly. "You're enough to try the patience of an oyster."
"I wish I had our Dinah here. I know I do," said Alice aloud, addressing nobody in particular. "She'd soon fetch it back."
"And who is Dinah, if I may venture to ask the question?" said the lorry.
Alice replied eagerly, for she was always ready to talk about her pet. "Dinah's our cat, and she's such a capital one for catching mice, you can't think. And oh, I wish you could see her after the birds. Why, she'll eat a little bird as soon as look at it." This speech caused a remarkable sensation among the party. Some of the birds hurried off at once. One old magpie began wrapping itself up very carefully, remarking, "I really must be getting home. The night air doesn't suit my throat." And a canary called out in a trembling voice to its children, "Come away, my dears. It's high time you were all in bed." On various pretexts, they all moved off, and Alice was soon left alone.
"I wish I hadn't mentioned Dinah," she said to herself in a melancholy tone. "Nobody seems to like her down here. I'm sure she's the best cat in the world. Oh, my dear Dinah, I wonder if I shall ever see you any more."
And here poor Alice began to cry again, for she felt very lonely and low-spirited. In a little while, however, she again heard a little pattering of footsteps in the distance, and she looked up eagerly, half hoping that the mouse had changed his mind and was coming back to finish his story.